necessarily say the name of the tour completely. Colder Than Shite, I guess, was one way to put it. But you're in the middle of a tour right now, the Colder Than Shite tour here in the Midwest, and we're excited to have you in the studio here.
Hey, thanks, Paul. It's nice to have stops, you know, before gigs to help keep me sane and talk to people rather than, you know, being in the van by myself all day, every day.
And I was going to ask you about that. You're going out on your own here on the road, and you do a lot of solo stuff. I mean, does that get lonely being by yourself on the road? And also, what's it like kind of touring in the winter, too, in this weather?
Right, man. Yeah, it gets super weird at times, but you have to kind of get just accustomed to it. I think it's kind of an addiction, the freedom of it all, and being able to tour and kind of do international stuff as well. And you know, folk festivals and smaller songwriter rooms or weird venues or house shows. So it enables just total freedom. But yeah, I mean, the daytimes are long, man, and you're in the van quite a while, so.
I saw the way you scheduled this for yourself, though. There's not a lot of driving. I know you got, like, I think towards the end of your tour, you got to go to Kansas City from, like, Illinois. And, like, today you came from Cedar Rapids literally to here so that you could play Chicago tomorrow. You know, it's just very savvy touring, and that's something that I wanted to kind of touch upon with you here, that just kind of noticing the way you do yourself, like, your self-released your music, you book your own tours, I mean, you go all over the place. You must have met a lot of people along the way from doing this. Like, are there some familiar faces that you're going to be seeing here on the road?
Yeah, definitely. That's starting to happen more and more, and it's just, you know, it's less of a soul crusher. I've done plenty of tours, covered a lot of territory where it's completely new faces and new people, so that can get a bit lonely and stuff. But yeah, and you know, there's buddies in every place, so you have allies, and that helps.
Do you have favorite city right now that you never would have thought before you did this?
I love playing in South Africa. That's my favorite place to play currently. I don't know, good high appreciation for arts over there, and good folk scene. Maybe there's not like 25 million bands like there are here, you know. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. That's a good idea, like a deeper appreciation, because they don't have as much that we have over here. But that's kind of one thing that I've heard a lot of international touring artists have told me, that like, oh, you go to Europe and they'll hook you up, they appreciate what you do there. And you're the only person I know that I've met that has played South Africa. So, I mean, that's amazing right there. And then you lived out in Southeast Asia for a while. I mean, would you say that all of those places, there's just a deeper appreciation for the arts versus America, or is it kind of different from place to place?
Very much different. South Africa's been really nice to me. America's getting better, but, you know, it's a great place to play music, but it's also very, very tough. You know, it's where everyone in the world wants to go. It's like you go to Asia or you go to Australia or South Africa, they're all like, oh yeah, it's my dream to play in America, you know. And I tell them, it's like, yeah, you must come over and check it out, but be prepared for some proper soul crushers, you know. But you know how it is, it gets better as you rechart territory and you build slowly but surely. I just feel that from all the places I've gone, it's just like attention spans in the States are very, very low. Comparatively, I mean, South Africa, the internet is some of the worst in the world, and that might have something to do with it, but people just have longer attention spans, and, you know, they still buy CDs, you can't necessarily have speedy smartphones in every single person's pocket, so I like it in that sense that it's a bit more sane, and I think America's great, but it's...
Technology that we have these days.
Pop culture delay.
You're hitting a lot of stops in the Midwest here. Just to kind of name off some of them. You've already played Rock Island, Ames, and Cedar Rapids. You're going to be in Chicago tomorrow night at Quenchers. But you've got Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. Then you come back to Indiana, Illinois, then out to Kansas City, and then you finish it off in your home state of Wisconsin. That's a lot of touring in 28 days. What's it like to kind of hit some of these places, and have you been to all these places before?
I have, yeah. I'm playing music for a living now, so it's like, you know, you got to play a lot of shows. So not taking too many nights off, maybe one night a week, and, you know, covering a lot of ground. And you know how it is, gas is friggin' super expensive, you gotta chart the logistics properly and stuff. But yeah, then there's some stuff out in New York and stuff and down south. But I like playing in the Midwest. It's friendly.
What's it like playing in New York? I mean, do you find it harder to find people to stay with? I mean, things are more expensive there, getting in and out of the island and whatnot. Or I mean, unless you're in Brooklyn.
Right.
I don't know. Tell me about what your experience is playing in New York.
I really like it. I think when I first went out there, I set my expectations kind of low, which I like to do in general in life, you know? yeah. Set the bar low, you know? But I thought it was great, man. One thing, and this is just a theory that I have, but I think one reason why the live show in general, live bands, might be down quite a bit is because everyone is in a band. And, you know, I tour quite a lot, and, you know, you see some really rough stuff that you and the crowd, and you have to be very patient and I play with plenty of great bands, but just a lot of, you know, stuff that's rough around the edges. And I think people are just like, well, if I go to a random show tonight, you know, it's, you know, the odds of it aren't necessarily going to be good. It's going to be maybe loud. It might get my face blown off. But the cool thing about New York is you go out there and, like, all the acts you see are really good and tight. And, you know, people that I saw just were out to see live music, and it was a bit more random. You know, they might just go to see a show because they knew the room, or the room had consistent acts that were solid and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's all hit or miss wherever you go.
So you're going to be playing South by Southwest coming up in March after you're done with the current tour that you're on. Tell me a little bit about South by Southwest and how you got hooked up with that. And I know you're promoting a record. We'll kind of get into that in a second here. But tell me about South by Southwest and maybe your previous experience with it and what you're looking forward to this March.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, South by Southwest is the oracle of music festivals, I think. You know, it's nothing like a Lollapalooza or, you know, a Bonnaroo. It's, you know, everything. It's kind of like a Bonnaroo maybe exploded into a million pieces and then put back together, and all the bands are small and, like, really cutting their teeth. I don't know. You can't really make a plan when you go down there because it's just utter chaos. But it's
there's so many bands that play down there. It's like thousands almost that play down
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, it seems like there's, like, and I've never been, but it seems like there's kind of, like, the main stuff, but then there's so many, like, different showcases. Like, you're playing
right.
The Milwaukee showcase representing Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but then you got some other shows along the way down there. It just kind of feels like you can walk into any bar down there. I mean, it's the music capital of the world, the live music capital of the world, and it seems like you can walk into, like, any club down there out of the hundreds that they've got, and at any given moment there's, you know, four or five bands that are going to be playing on the bill.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be, like, overload going down to something like that.
Yeah, it's impossible to catch, you know, half the stuff. But, you know, there's, like, bands playing, you know, on top of McDonald's or setting up behind the Port-a-Johns and stuff and checking out CDs. It's cool. You walk away with a stack of cool, like, samplers and albums, and you see a bunch of really, really cool bands and stuff.
I've kind of heard, like, previous experiences that people have had South by Southwest. It's like, you're in this band, you finally get the gig, South by Southwest, but then you go and play the show, and it's like, oh, man, I didn't know I was going to be playing it, like, noon to a crowd of three people in a cafe. You know, this wasn't the experience I thought it was going to be. Now, with you saying that you set the bar low for yourself, are you prepared for something like that? Or do you know what your shows are going to be like, the times, the sets, the places, the crowd expectation? I mean, are you prepared for that right now, or is that something that you're not worried about until it happens?
Yeah, man, I don't know. I've played every kind of show, you know, from great to god-awful, soul-crushing, you know, so... you know, most of the shows that I saw there, if not all of them, had decent crowds. You know, there's just so many dang people. But yeah, dude, as a touring band, you kind of prepare for anything, and you get ready to take on, you know, whatever, a heckler, or maybe you play to seven people. But it, you know, I've played to seven people, and it's been some of the best shows I've had. You know, it just all depends. As long as people are appreciative and respectful, and there's some kind of connection there, you know, it's all right.
And you have a new album coming out. You kind of made me privy to it yesterday when we had talked. And you gave me some privy tracks before, but I didn't realize this was coming out really soon and that you had a sampler ready to go. Tell me a little bit about the record, what the name of it is going to be. I mean, is it American Folk Armageddon?
That is the name of the record, yeah.
I've heard that's, like, inspired by, I have the quote here, people who refer to your style as American Folk Armageddon. And that's the name of your new record.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the record and and what it was like making this and the process behind the songs that are going to be a part of it.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, a lot of themes, like one big one being kind of feeling like a huge underdog, you know, and, you know, I've never had a record label or management or any or a booking agent up until, you know, the last kind of 2, 3, 4 months since this stuff started to pop. You know, it's all very small. It's very indie. It's still mostly DIY. But, you know, the world is I keep thinking the world is really small, you know, with the internet and being able to go lots of places. And every time I think that, it comes and just, like, crushes me, you know, and reminds me of how big it actually is. But, you know, travel's always been a big part of it, being an underdog, kind of weathering the storm and the long, slow burn and just sticking to your guns and sticking it out. And I really think there's so much music in the world. I wanted the title to kind of reflect what the album was about and sounded like, which is why we called it American Folk Armageddon. And so people know a little bit what they're getting, you know, even if they haven't heard of what I do.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and listen to a track off of there. I figure since you're talking about being an underdog versus the world, it sounds like it would be the appropriate track to listen to right now. We'll go ahead and listen to that, and we'll talk about some more things. With Brett Miskey here in the studio on Longwire Illinois, KeyHatchOnAir.com. I'm Paul Freud. This is Brett Miskey versus the world. It's a debut right here on the station. And is this the first time it's ever being played to anyone here, or is this
it's the first time, I think so.
This is the debut. Versus the World by Brett Miskey here on CatchOnAir.com. Thank you.
I'm not my mind, and I never was. I'm not my mind, and I never was. Thinking of, I keep a close eye on my hopes and dreams. I keep a close eye on my hopes and dreams. Don't mean hands down, chin up, rearrange your eye. You want it perfect, but you already know. You want it perfect, but you already know. Oh, 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 oh. I put my talons in the trash can, living on fires with the clocks in my hands. I watch the light like it was so fast. I can't. Hands down, chin up, rearrange your iron, reclaim right now, paint the Milky Way. Hands down, chin up, rearrange your iron, reclaim right now, paint the Milky Way.
I'm back here in the ed.air.com studios in Loudoun, Illinois. I'm Paul Sabari with Brett Newsky. And Brett, we're going to talk a little bit about, we talked about your tour that you're on right now. We talked about your album, which is going to be released soon, American Folk Armageddon. What's the release date on that?
May 13th. On Goodland Records.
And from Goodland. So it's not going to be released by you, which is Yes Please Records.
That was forever ago. Yeah, okay. I mean, that was in our collegiate days. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, like, some of the other records that you've done have been released on Yes Please, but like it looks like even up until 2012, the Pretenses was put out by that. And then I was going to ask you about The Nod, mm-hmm. which I stumbled across the Wikipedia stuff for The Nod, and we're reading up about you today. I was like,
that's our old band from college,
which,
yeah.
It seemed like there was some success there, you know, opening for some acts like, oh gosh, I saw some of the names here. That sounded like that was a pretty amazing time there. Third Eye Blind, OK Go, Casey Elephant, I mean, some big bands there. But reading the stuff, though, the ironic tone or, like, the sarcastic tone that was in this, you know, saying that, like, you know, Newsky played the drums on the album before a permanent replacement song. This drummer was never important enough to be named. Things like this are just even, like, when the band broke up, like, how your fans were devastated and, you know, considering suicide and things like that. But, you know, I wanted to ask you about The Nod, because it mentions... In the first paragraph, says, you know, distributed by independent record label Yes Please Records, a label created by singer Brett Newsky to produce Nod albums.
Well, that's funny, because someone went in and manipulated the Wikipedia from whatever years ago. I mean, that band disbanded 3 or 4 years ago. It was a good run, man. It was like a fun college band, you know, pretty rowdy, kind of indie power pop stuff. But, you know, we all moved in different directions, went to law school. It was funny. I mean, Madison was a really cool town for music, but we always had this little, like, circle of, like, super hipsters that just hated us, man. They would just, like, graffiti our posters, and, like, it was just, like, this mini turf war, which is really kind of funny looking back on it.
I've never been able to pinpoint the Madison music scene, because it just seems like it's everywhere. Like, you know, there's, like, the jam band guys, the hipsters, you know, the pop guys, you know, like, and then, of course, like, the acts that come to town can vary from country to funk to rock to pop to
great.
To whatever. I've never been able to really like figure out exactly, you know, like as if I was a UW Madison student, you know, where would I be going for the shows? Where is the underground
sure. Great touring town as a touring band, but I mean, living there as a band, the city's so transient with the school. You know, it's like 40,000 undergrads, so I mean, your friends and your fan base turns over every year, every 2 years. So it's just, I don't know. You know, it's not. It's tough. It's
and
tough.
Usually, the college student doesn't come with money, so you're getting
right,
cheap,
right.
Demographic too. But you're seeing great touring town, and you toured all over the place. I mean, you know, we mentioned earlier. Internationally and nationally. Tell me about some of the stories that have happened on tour. You were mentioning an incident in Detroit where your van got stolen. Why don't you elaborate on that?
I was giving you next. Yeah, in November my van got stolen in Detroit. I parked in my buddy's loft downtown, and I just came out, and there's just a bunch of broken glass where my van used to be. And I called the towing company. I was like, hey, did you guys tow a Dodge Caravan? He's like, what kind of car is it? I'm like, 2003 Dodge Caravan. The guy's like, yeah, that's stolen for sure. And he said, like, a 12-year-old could steal that car. It's like the most stolen car in Detroit.
I don't do that. It's easy to, hotwire.
Easy to break in, easy to jack. Yeah, for sure. You can, like, open it with a coat hanger or whatever.
Shove a coat hanger into the ignition.
Yeah, as I tell the world how to break into my van. Well, that's what happened. So the police found it like a week and a half later. It was ditched in the MGM Grand Casino in Detroit. So the thugs had what they do is they steal the van, you know, they kind of party in it, bust it up a bit, and then drive it around and steal more stuff, and then pick up their homies, and then, you know, ditch the van because it's not really like worth really much or anything to them, and then they, you know,
and then all the money they made off of jacking equipment.
Right.
That's an unfortunate story. It's great that you got it back. Were you still in Detroit when you got it back? Or
no.
You were stranded
I rented a car and went out to New York and came back on tour. And it was kind of funny because like when I reported the car stolen, like the big man, the police officer at the desk, like he was just not surprised in the least bit. He's just like, yep, Detroit, yep, we make them. And we steal them. Oh, yeah.
Was it like a Big Lebowski moment where, do you have any leads? You know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And while I was there, I was probably in there 40 minutes reporting, and three other people came in with stolen car reports in that time. So it's just like, yeah,
and
standard.
Did you lose anything as a result of that?
Or? Yeah, a bunch of stuff got stolen. Window smashed, ignition pretty busted up.
But
I took a lot of my gear inside because my buddy's like, yo, man, sketch vest. So, yeah, it could have been much worse, but, you know, it was proper soul crusher.
I feel like a lot of these stories, there's some soul crushing in there that seems to be kind of a theme.
Soul crushing, man. Indie touring, it's all about avoiding soul crushers.
Exactly what keeps you humble and, like, what maybe keeps like a good head on your shoulders, or at least
some
reality about you. I mean, do you think the rigors of touring and being an independent musician have kind of, you know, helped you personally grow in a way that maybe you wouldn't have normally expected if you chose a different career path, like, let's say, you know, I don't know, jump out of investor or something?
Well, I think it's beneficial to kind of, as an indie DIY act, to start on your own and climb your way out of the sewers, you know. I've seen, you know, so that you kind of develop the DIY skills or whatever to do some of the admin stuff. I've had buddies who have gotten signed at very young ages, and then, you know, stuff doesn't always go as well later on, years later, and then, you know, you kind of get flipped upside down, and you're like, oh, now I got to do my own booking and a lot of this DIY stuff, and it's, I don't know, I'd rather, yeah, like, climb out of the lurch, you know, than start at the top, so.
And you've got new management behind you now. Does that make things a lot easier, kind of, you know, taking a little bit off of your plate in terms of where you can focus now more a little bit on the artistic side of things rather than the management and business side of things?
It definitely helps. I mean, it's, you know, it's very nice to have an ally and an anchor and somebody you can go to, whether it's a music problem or just, like, you know, John is my manager and is a really good buddy as well. So it's a good, you know, to have that kind of moral support as well and have a little bit of a, you know, team effort. So it's really nice. I'm really excited about it.
Should we listen to another song right now?
Yeah, let's do it. Go ahead.
I've got Hell Will Be a Better Place If You Were There. What's the
Oh, it's called Hell Will Be Better If We're In It Together.
That's it. I knew it had a clever title to it. All right, so Brett Nixon here on the edgeonair.com.
Shucks.
You've got to come back every time you're around. I mean, this is
of course,
too,
man.
Too fun. But yeah, we were talking about your perils in Detroit, and off the air you were asking me about some of the independent radio in Chicago. Do you find outside of Chicago, maybe in some of the smaller cities that you're going to, we'll pick up this conversation live now, do you find that there are independent radio stations or independent publications that are kind of doing what maybe we're doing and what you've seen in other cities? I mean, are there people that are covering your music and really passionate about
in some of the tour spots, you know, like you said, there's always like in the smaller cities, there's always like one or two or three guys, you know. Sometimes all you need is one really like super jazzed person on music and live music to make stuff happen, which is some of the places I've been. But I don't know, the bigger cities are always tougher. There's 20 radio stations here, or what, how many there.
It's crazy nowadays because original rock music is kind of a dying medium. Like when you scan across like Chicago radio stations on your dial.
You mean like butt rock? Like, oh yeah!
Unfortunately, that's where it went. But I mean, you know, like I don't see why, you know, there's pop stations, there's country stations, and classic rock is way more popular than modern rock. And I know that, yeah, there's a lot of butt rock out there. But of course, I mean, if there is an original music station, you're going to hear your your Nickelbacks and stuff like that. And I hate to say it, a lot of people like the song, but AWOL Nation's Sail.
Oh, I like that song. I think that's the best butt rock song ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is a butt rock song. The more I heard it, the more I was like, oh, this is so bro rock. Like, this is, like I loved it. When I first heard it, like, I was like, yes. And then, like, the more I realized, I'm like, oh, this is like...
That's one of my favorite butt rock songs of all time.
Like, just frustrated, like, car mechanic type dudes that can't get in touch with their feelings love Sail, you know? I'm like, that's the most emotional that they'll ever get is that song. So I don't know.
I gotta give respect to that song, but you know how it is. I don't know. Butt rock's a funny. It's a funny genre because it never dies. Like it will never die. You know,
and going on 40 years.
And yeah, and you can predict the next line before the guy says, "Can find the answers to the questions in my darkness." Oh,
it's always something about frustrated about some girl or lack of control or stuff like that. I don't know. Did you see someone put together this really good country compilation of the top country songs of 2013? How like there was recurring themes in like every single song. About this, or
it's
like a YouTube video someone put together, but it was like, they're all about drinking, they're all about driving their pickup trucks, they're all about picking up a girl, they're all about taking her down to the river.
Sound like two bitter old guys right now.
I guess the point that I was trying to say was like, there's no original rock stations, even country music isn't the same as it used to be. Like, there's definitely a corporate influence on what's known as popular music or music that reaches the masses. And I think I was saying off the air, too, that there's lots of people out there that say, oh, yeah, I like music, but they don't dig deeper than what's really much there. They might read that Rolling Stone article that says top artists to watch out for in the next year.
So if you're stranded on a desert island and you can only choose butt rock or bro country the rest of your life, what do you go with?
Butt rock. Yeah, because bro country really, I don't know, I can't do it.
Who's your favorite butt rock band? Stained. It's gotta be Stained.
Yeah, what was it? Aaron Lewis was the. Mm-hmm. He's a decent songwriter for that genre.
Right.
And I think that was kind of the thing about him too. Was like, he was like the Pied Piper of really frustrated, blue ball dudes.
He's the Oracle of butt rock.
Aaron Lewis. No, and I think that the peak of that came when it was like. Family Values Tour, and it was the video with Fred Durst and Aaron Lewis.
I love Fred Durst. I like his movies now. He's like doing some cheap horror movies here and there.
No idea.
Oh yeah, look out.
Like the really poor man's Rob Zombie.
Yeah, something like that. Like I've seen, saw this movie where he was easily the best actor in the movie. So whatever that. But The Limp Bizkit's back, dude. I heard they were back on tour.
Is Westmoreland playing for
them? Oh, I don't know.
Because that's the thing about that band is the guitar player Westmoreland was like the contact.
They're all really good players.
But
yeah.
Especially though, he left for part of it. I think like between their third and fourth record, he left, and that was like when their popularity like really faded. And then I think he got back together with them. And, it's like when Frusciante came back with the Chili Peppers, it kind of invigorates the songwriting process and reinvents the band, but also has like a callback to what they had. Speaking of the Chili Peppers, did you watch the Super Bowl halftime show?
I didn't even watch the Super Bowl.
I figured you didn't because you were texting me during it. Like, oh my gosh.
It's a sin.
I can't do business right now. But,
I'm going to get kicked out of America, dude.
No, there's a lot of people that didn't watch it.
What happened? I heard the Chili Peppers. Were they good? I heard Bruno Mars was good.
I thought he was great. A lot of people didn't like it. I think for the most part, I think people were blown away. I like Bruno Mars. I think as a songwriter and a performer, and a producer, he's pretty much good for what we've got going these days.
Right. He's at the top, dude.
To look at these days. So I thought he really carried it. He started out with like a drum solo, played as one hit that's a party rock song, the Locked Out of Heaven. Did a couple of others, getting some good arrangements with his bands, kind of hopping around there. Then they bring out the Chili Peppers. He introduces them, but it was like fluid. It was like all one solid performance. And Chili Peppers go out there and do Giveaway Now. You can kind of tell that there's like a little bit of like a backing track to it.
Really?
Flea's bass wasn't even plugged in. Like no wireless, nothing. He just came out with like a bass on his,
Don't honestly believe they would have lip sync. No way.
I have a feeling Keita sang, but I have a feeling that Flea's bass track was pre-recorded.
Well, but why? He's like the greatest bass player of all time.
I think for the sake of the show.
Really?
Because it's like you're putting together a half-time performance. Like 25 minutes.
I'm gonna look into this. I don't believe it.
Yeah, no, he had nothing plugged in. Mm. You gotta look at the picture. And that's what like, when I was watching, I was like, man, they're really not showing Flea a lot. This guy's the greatest bass player we've got pretty much living these days. And like,
was that a lot of talk online that the bass wasn't plugged in?
Last night it was a lot of Bruno Mars did great and a lot of people being like, oh, who's this guy?
Right.
The really pink tank.
There's always going to be haters, huh?
Of course, yeah. The big controversy behind it, not even a half inch of the Super Bowl, but the ads was Coca-Cola did a commercial with America the Beautiful saying in like different languages and like just kind of showing like different cultures in America drinking Coke. Racist white America was all over the Twitterverse about this, like, this America. It was terrible, but, it's the Super Bowl, it's a cultural highlight of the year, as always, and this year kind of fell flat, but, no wardrobe malfunctions, no controversial commercials, there's a good Radio Shack ad with, like, Alf and Hulk Hogan, like, a bunch of 80s. Mm-hmm. Sort of stuff, just saying that, like, the 80s call, they want their store back, so Radio Shack is changing their image.
The Shack.
Because now it's like, you buy your cell phone from there instead of, like, the gearhead that would buy his ohms and resistors or, transistors, I don't know, this stuff, but, like, it used to be like...
Shack Attack.
It used to be a hobby shop, kind of.
Sure.
No,
man. I'm just thinking about how much I miss Shaquille O'Neal now. I wish he would come back to the NBA.
He's so old.
Nah, dude, he can still crush. I mean, 40, yeah. The last man I remember ever shattering backboards,
That's true. There's like the high school guys that you see clips of. But yeah, in the NBA, Shaq was dominant, man.
It was a big man game, and I spend a lot of my time watching 90s NBA reruns. And I haven't even seen a 90s NBA game this year yet. It's just like I'd rather watch Rick Smits, the dunking Dutchman, shoot a baby hook over Ronnie Cicely in game 3 of the 94 playoffs. I don't know.
Yeah, you're definitely pulling out some awesome 90s basketball games. That was like a pinnacle. I mean, I grew up in Chicago, man. So I have Michael Jordan.
MJ, dude.
You could set your watch every year.
Scottie Pippen was my favorite player of all time.
That's awesome.
Scottie.
I mean, Charles Barkley even tells Jordan, like, hey, man, I would have won championships too if I had
Scottie Pippen. Yeah, that's terrible. Terrible. I had a side project in college. We named it Pippen after Scottie Pippen.
That's
it's
awesome.
A duo, yeah. Pippen.
Did you know the original name of the band Pearl Jam?
Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, is that amazing?
Yeah, that's solid. Eddie Vedder loves 90s basketball, huh?
I figure you probably. I mean, since we're talking about music and 90s basketball and you coming from Milwaukee, did you hear Stephen Malkmus' new record at all?
I haven't. I've seen him touring, though.
I guess he has a song on there that's about the incident between, like, Brandon Jennings and Scott Skiles. Jennings basically got Skiles fired and, like, wouldn't play for Skiles.
That's what the song's about?
That's great.
Respect to Milwaukee.
My buddy Jared, Melvin Gunn, is a big Malkmus fan, and he like texted me one day. He's like, "Do you know about this song? Like, what about this Brandon Jennings?"
What an insignificant event to write about. That's great.
That's literally what I said, because he's thinking as a non-sports fan, he's like, this must have been a big deal. And I was like, this is like a blip of like the whole season last year.
But he probably made it brilliant and made it some bigger metaphor, huh?
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the thing kind of about, like, American folk music is, like, there's stories from anywhere. Like, even if fans of American folk music might not necessarily be the demographic that wants to hear about sports, you can still turn a story like that into a song.
Sure.
Have you ever drawn inspiration from something that, like, was completely out of the blue like that? Where do your songs come from personally?
Yeah, of course. I'm just really pumped that, like, folk music is on such an upswing in general, It's like back to humans playing instruments and, I don't know, people hate on Mumford & Sons, but I think they're pretty good for what's going on. I think they're kind of trailblazers as far as, letting the people know that this kind of thing is happening and it's trickling down. Somebody has to do it,
Do you think it's kind of like, maybe coincidental or maybe like harkens back to like the British invasion or like the British kind of American blues movement of the 60s? How like,
sure,
like,
it's
like
yeah,
sounds a British band playing American music, kind of like showing us quote unquote how it's done.
Yeah,
but I was gonna say, who do you attribute like this recent kind of uptick in folk music? Who do you kind of attribute that to? I mean, is it Mumford? Is it like Jeff Tweedy and Wilco? Is it Ryan Adams? Is it
Well, I guess, I mean, I love all those, you know, bands you just mentioned. I think as far as, like, you know, really trailblazing it, it's Mumfords, right? Because they're all over every top 40 or whatever. I mean, that'd be great if Conor Oberst is on, you know, more radio airplay or any of those cats. But, yeah, I mean, Ed Sharp and Monsters and Men, it's all the stuff that's kind of a sound now. And it's, yeah, it's a good sound. It feels good. It's, you know, it's acoustic instruments, but it's also rock and roll. So hopefully it's here to stay, you know, in different factions and different waves.
I think you bring up a good point that hopefully it's here to stay, too, because it is people playing instruments. It's not, you know, fancy machinery. I mean, like...
No MacBooks on stage.
Yeah, I was kind of upset that Daft Punk didn't thank electricity for their...
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like they get it. They dress as robots, man. It's respect.
I was glad that they stayed in character.
Yeah. Does anyone know what they look like?
Yeah, there's pictures of them.
Okay.
You know, they look like a couple of cheesy old French dudes. I didn't say that. I love the French. But I can show you a picture later and what they look like. But, you know, just look like normal guys, and like old club guys in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, is there anyone you want to give a shout-out to, anything you
want to
get out of the way, anything, what's coming up in 2014?
Shout-out to you, Paul Chavary.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, I noticed your call on in between commercials is like, they're playing stadiums next, but now they're all yours. And I was like, oh, man, I'm trying to set the bar low here. Well, and you're telling me we're going to play stadiums.
We used to be, the call slogan for the station used to be, the greatest music you've never heard, and the previous program directors, Kevin Wood and Doug Bolin, wanted to change that to the future legends of music, and that's kind of where it sticks right now. I've been thinking about changing this. I don't know what I want to change it to, but yeah, the future legends of music.
Man, I don't ever see myself being a legend, but who knows? I don't know.
I mean, you never want to talk about
My
that.
Dad,
you
know, like, maybe my dad like, will think I'm a legend or something.
I don't
want
to get you talking about that topic, because that's just so... So kind of pretentious and
right. I liked that first tagline.
The music
I think heard. That's good. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's Tumble. Kind of the point that we want to bring. Mm-hmm. Maybe people don't know who you are, and we want to make sure that they know who you are. Because I feel like in the next couple of years here, a lot of people will know who you are.
Oh, so please. Well, thanks, dude.
Yeah,
thanks.
Stick to what you're doing, Brett. You're making us proud.
Thanks, man. High five awesome. Across the mics. Okay, cool.
It's Brett and it's me. You're listening to theengineer.com, and now we're going to finish you out with No Acre, off of Brett News TV record coming out this May. You can find Brett News TV online at BrettNewsTV.net.com. That's BrettNewsTV.com. Brett News TV. Here on the outside,